Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
A very good morning and welcome to DW's Africa Link this Wednesday, the 10th of August. I am Jane Ayeko-Kumet, your host. In today's program, tensions in Zambia as presidential and parliamentary elections draw closer.
The political environment is tense. People, the population are fearful or afraid that there may be an outbreak of violence. This violence doesn't seem to be ending.
Boko Haram's disputed leader Abubakar Shekau reacts to concerns about the group's leadership.
Shekau is kicking, disagreeing, but Nigerians are saying it is just judgment time. It's a matter of time. These people will be caught and brought to justice.
And Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta to seek re-election come 2017, but also transform his coalition of small parties into one party. Stay tuned to this edition of Africa Link.
Top story.
Economic analysts in Zambia's mineral-rich copper belt province say this Thursday's general elections will be the most difficult and highly contested. The state of the economy has dominated the campaign trail. Ordinary Zambians in the second and third largest cities of Kitwe and Ndola, both in the copper belt region, are looking forward to vote for a new government that will prioritize improving their standard of living. Kathy Sikombe is currently in Ndola. She spoke to my colleague Abubakar Jallo about the campaign pledges of the different parties.
They are talking about more jobs and also food on the table and also ensuring that children go to school, basic needs are met, because right now it is difficult to live in Zambia because the economy is not doing very well. In the past 1 year, Zambian kwacha has fallen tremendously by more than 50%, and the prices of commodity prices have gone up by as much as 100%.
So you visited the second and third largest cities in Zambia, that is Kitwe and Ndola. Tell me, how is the situation different there from Lusaka?
The situation in Ndola is quiet and calm. And I must say that the Copper Belt is also a stronghold for the ruling Patriotic Front. But right now, it's very difficult to say, and it's very, very, I think, a new thing that people on the Copper Belt are actually talking about the opposition. So it's quite mixed. Some are for the opposition, United Party for National Development, while others are for the Patriotic Front. So it's a mixture, really. And people here that I've spoken to on the streets of Kitwe and Ndola are saying that the race on Thursday is going to be very, very tightly contested. And even when I ask them who they think will win, they cannot tell between the two, and they're thinking that the elections could go right to the second round.
Kathy Sikombe in Zambia's Copper Belt region. Now, head of the African Union Observer Mission, former Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan, has said that the political climate in Zambia is conducive enough for a peaceful election. But on Monday, supporters of the ruling Patriotic Front Party clashed with members of the opposition UPDM Party. How conducive is the political climate really in Zambia? Africa Link's Crispin Mwakideo, currently in Lusaka, put this question to political analyst Neo Simutanyi.
The political environment is tense. People, the population are fearful or afraid that there may be an outbreak of violence. This violence doesn't seem to be ending. And 2 days, 3 days before the election, it still seems to be on the increase, especially in the capital. And I think the reason is that the stakes are quite high, and also it would appear that the government does not want to deal with the issue of violence to create a conducive atmosphere for people to feel free to express express themselves in the ballot box. There are also issues and concerns about the fairness and impartiality of the Electoral Commission of Zambia. The voters' role is still controversial. We still have over 132,000 names on the voters' roll of people who share same registration details. That is a big concern, and it becomes very difficult to go into this election accepting that it to be free, fair and credible.
What about Lungu's running mate? Do you think that ethnicity played a key role in picking some of these running mates, as some have suggested?
I don't know whether it is ethnicity, but definitely the choice of Vice President Inongewina as a running mate may not benefit the Lungu presidential ticket, because she comes from a constituency which traditionally does not support PF. Even in the 2011 elections, PF only won one seat in Western Province. So there was no political basis for appointing her as the running mate. The main support of PF came from Northern, Luapula, Copper Belt. And that's where the running mate should have come from. It would have made sense. That was not done. I think it marginalizes the traditional support base, the traditional constituency of the PF in Northern Wapula, and that may actually translate into either staying away from voting, the low turnouts in supposedly PF strongholds, or people voting for the opposition in those areas.
And now let's talk about the Patriotic Front slogan. They have been trying to sell the idea, Sonta Apo Wabomba, if I have pronounced that correctly, which means look at what we have done. What is there to show that the PF has done in Zambia?
The PF, like any government, has come up with new projects, completed some of them, but most of the projects that the PF has completed were started by the MMD government. They only completed them. But I think the issue really here is not on what PF has achieved in the last 5 years. The issue is the extent to which the PF government has improved the lives of the majority of Zambian people. I think people are concerned about the state of the economy. That people are concerned about the deterioration that's taking place in a very short period of time. The question really is whether the PF can move the country further than where it is in the last, based on what it has done in the last 5 years. MMD was voted out even when it was doing well. All the indices at the time MMD lost power were positive. Today, in the first 5 years of the PF, economic indicators are actually very poor than they were at the time that they took over power. So that becomes a problem to talk about achievements when the overall macro economy has actually deteriorated. But of course, Zambians not always vote on basis of economic conditions.
And in your opinion, what should be the next government's main priority?
I think the next government's main priority is tackling the problem of poverty. Poverty in Zambia remains a persistent cancer. Poverty and inequality. I think these are areas that where a serious government should actually address.
Zambian political analyst Neo Simutanyi.
News, analysis, and feature reports. All that here on Africa Link.
A struggle in Nigeria's Islamist militant group Boko Haram is playing out in public. The so-called Islamic State, IS, named a new leader. IS accuses Boko Haram's long-term leader, Abubakar Shekau, of killing his own people and living in luxury. Abu Mashab al-Banawi was named last week as the new governor of its so-called West Africa province. Banawi now alleges that Shekau killed fellow Muslims, including his own fighters. Shekau responded in a video posted on YouTube saying al-Banawi is not qualified to lead the group, but insisted that they have not reneged on their loyalty to Abu Bakr al-Baghdad, the leader of IS. This might signal division within the group, but what are Nigerians saying about it? Abubakar Jallo put this question to DW's Ben Shemang in Abuja.
Nigerians are actually happy that, yes, there is a faction, or there are factions in Boko Haram, bearing in mind that once upon a time there used to be the leader of Ansarul Jihad for West Africa, Khalid Arbanawi. That man has been arrested in Kogi State in central Nigeria. Outside that, the former spokesman for Boko Haram, Abu Musab al-Barnawi, has now been confirmed by IS as the leader of Boko Haram. And like you said, shekel is kicking, disagreeing. But again, Nigerians are saying it is just judgment time. It's a matter of time. These people will, of course, will be caught and of course, brought to justice.
Now, some analysts have suggested that this is a golden opportunity for the government to wipe out the terror group. Is there any indication that the government is planning to take advantage of the political infighting within Boko Haram?
Absolutely, the government is not talking about that, neither is it jubilating. But again, the military on grounds, talking of the army in particular, the Chief of Army Staff, Lieutenant General Tukur Buratai, has been saying that Boko Haram has been defeated and defeated decisively, and that what you have is pockets of the remnants here and there, and he calls it mop-up exercise. And as far as they are concerned, wherever they are, they will be pursued. In particular, the dreaded Sambisa Forest has been encircled by the Nigerian armed forces. You have the air bombardment by the Air Force where the ground troops are penetrating. And around the areas too, you also have the multinational joint task force who are also doing a yeoman's job.
You are saying that some members of the Nigerian army are claiming that the terror group has been defeated. But President Muhammadu Buhari himself has said that Boko Haram has been decimated and to a large extent defeated, but he hasn't claimed that the group has been totally defeated. Do Nigerians, however, fear a major comeback of this terror group?
I don't foresee a situation where this Boko Haram will have a major comeback. Neither do you have Nigerians expressing those fears, but they are simply saying that the armed forces should be thorough in their decision, ensure that Boko Haram is decisively defeated. But again, you are talking of some people who have been taught on how to make bombs. Now, even if you've defeated a man, physically you've snatched his guns, he has surrendered. But again, it will take a kind of a post-management of such criminal to ensure that their ability to make bombs not being used to cause disaffection in society. So these are the areas where some Nigerians are worried. But in terms of physical war, the military has won all of that. Some still have, yes, some elements of fear.
What's the general feeling in the country? Do people somehow believe that the government might be planning some covert operation in order to take out the terror group?
Well, absolutely. Abubakar, as we are talking, we are seeing more of the arms are being imported, more. And when I say more, we're also seeing what you call continuous military exercise. The amphibious brigades are being trained. You also have people being trained on desert operations. We also have people, all kinds of equipment that will ensure that no matter the terrain, the Nigerian military will always operate in. So there is that big confidence building surrounding the Nigerian military. They've been able to do it in Liberia, Sierra Leone, and some other countries. Nigerians are saying, do it back home. And they are waiting. They are hopeful.
Ben Shemang in Abuja. Coming up, we discuss about President Uhuru Kenyatta's plan to transform his ruling coalition into a political party. Stay tuned.
Behind the headlines.
Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta said on Tuesday he would seek re-election next year. But that is not all. He now wants to transform his coalition of small parties into one party. The move is aimed at seeing off another likely challenge by the opposition leader. Kenyatta narrowly won the 2013 election. Africa Link's Wanjiku Mwaura has been closely following the story. She had a chat with Abubakar Jallow about it.
Okay, so I think I would have to start from 1992. Where the multi-party governance started in Kenya. And before that, it was only KANU that was the ruling party and the mother and father of all. But then we had this amendment on our constitution that allowed for more for multi-partyism in Kenya. And thereafter, we've had so many political parties. And I think what the president wants to do is to make sure that we do not have these political parties that are more or less ethnic outfits there, and to bring people together under one umbrella, so representing people from all over the country as opposed to only from one region, which has been the case in most political parties.
So how big is the current Jubilee coalition?
It has about nine political parties in it. And by merging this, and there are about 12 more that have already communicated to the registrar that they would like to join the new party once it's launched in September.
And how much is this reflected to the ethnicity distribution in Kenya?
I would say it covers pretty much all of Kenya. For instance, TNA is affiliated to having more Kikuyu members from the Kikuyu tribe from Kenya. URP would be affiliated again to the Kalenjin tribe. Originally, the first president was Kenyatta's father, Jomo Kenyatta. He was a Kikuyu, which is one of the major tribes in Kenya. Then after that came Daniel Toroitich Arap Moi, who was a Kalenjin. And then after that, the third president was Mwai Kibaki, who was a Kikuyu. And then currently we have another Kikuyu. So it would feel then that the presidency is a reserve for only certain tribes in Kenya, even though we are over 40 tribes in Kenya. And so there's always been issues every election year that some tribes are not well represented in the government, in the leadership of the country. And so this move is seeking to bring together not just the Kikuyus and not just the Kalenjins, but also the people from Western Kenya, people from Northeastern Kenya, people from the coastal region of Kenya, and bring them together in national leadership platform where they can actually articulate issues that are affecting people from the different parts of the country.
So how big is this going to be a power base when, for example, Uhuru Kenyatta plans to transform this coalition into a one political party?
It's already started bringing some bit of tension because people want to be part of the winning party, of course, and experts might say that they have the leverage that they need because they have been called a PR government and it's not for no cause. They are very media savvy and are constantly posting photos of development projects that they've done. And people want to be part of this euphoria that they are currently having. But people are already eyeing positions in the new party. But the president was very categorical in saying that they will not endorse anyone for this party. People that want to be nominated will have to go to the people on the ground, the grassroots level, and say, okay, this is what I will do for you. Please vote for me, as opposed to what has been the norm in past years where the president or the presidential aspirant says, yes, I am behind this person.
Okay, now let's talk about the opposition a little bit here. The opposition, or the main opposition party, it's also a coalition called. Can you maybe tell me a bit more about that? Because as far as I understand, they also intend to transform their coalition into a major political base.
I think that they're just panicking because a couple of weeks ago, they were saying that the Jubilee coalition, which is the ruling party, was buying their members, the opposition members. And I feel that this could be a knee-jerk reaction to bringing their people together and assuring them that, you know what, together we are stronger. And so we need to come under this one umbrella and beat the new party that is about to be formed.
A colleague chat there between Wanjiku Mwaura and Abubakari Jallow. Now, in a bid to curb migration from sub-Saharan Africa to Europe, Germany wants to invest more in the African continent. This is meant to create jobs as well as contribute towards development. To see what Germany has been doing, DW's Adrian Kirsch was in Senegal, one of the countries that has been benefiting from Berlin's support. There, he met with some refugee returnees. His report is now presented by Sarah Stephan.
Like many young Senegalese, Modou Tioune thought Europe was the solution to all his problems. 10 years ago, he paid 500 euros to try and cross the sea on a fishing boat to the Canary Islands, the Spanish archipelago off the west coast of Africa. But his dream was thwarted when Spanish coast guards picked him up and immediately deported him back to Senegal.
I started out on this very beach, but the trip was so risky. I'll never do anything like that again. Life and death are no longer in your hands. Those 6 days were the worst days of my life.
Tioune is now chairman of an organization for migrants who've returned to Senegal. It has now more than 500 members. Tiun shares his own experience and tells other young people about the dangers of illegal migration.
When I give young people advice, I say don't do it. But if they're determined, I tell them they should try to find a legal way, with a visa and a passport. But not those deadly boats. Thousands of young Africans have drowned going that way.
Today, Tiun has a job in a fish factory, three children, and owns a car. He says it's entirely possible to find success at home in Senegal. Tough control measures have drastically reduced the number of people fleeing African countries. German's Minister of Economic Cooperation and Development, Gerd Müller, who was in Senegal this week, believes that ensuring good governance and investing in Africa could encourage people to stay in their home countries.
We must ensure that we create jobs in African countries. Senegal is a country of origin also for people who come to Germany. The clear message is that your future is here in your own country. That is why we are heavily investing in Senegal, in Niger and other African countries.
Deshalb investieren wir verstärkt im Senegal, im Niger und in anderen Ländern Afrikas.
One of the options is a kind of Marshall Plan for Africa, like the one the US set up after World War II to help European countries. Müller agrees that this might be a good idea.
Africa will be Europe's future challenge. The continent will in the next 30 years double its population. That means that every year 20 million jobs need to be created for the young generation. That is why we must invest here in a totally new dimension, namely in infrastructure, energy, food security and education for the young generation. Africa has big opportunities. It can feed its population and is a major source of sunshine. We are investing here in solar energy, and for us Europeans and Germany, it is an interesting partnership.
Als Europäer, als Deutsche ein interessanter Partner.
The deputy mayor of Kayar, Aliou Ndoye, agrees investing in education is the better option as the population is growing. Right now, the bigger part of the community depends on fishing.
In the high season, for 9 months of the year, people come from all over Senegal to work in the fishing industry. The fishermen here have made big efforts to improve their situation and to protect the resources. Even agriculture has developed considerably. People are attracted here from all around the region.
But for farmer Aliou Sow, it's not been easy. He used to irrigate his field with a diesel pump, which turned out to be too expensive. His field dried out and he couldn't compete with cheap vegetables imported from Europe. Now, with development aid from Germany, he uses a solar pump, a more sustainable solution. He's optimistic that his seven children will also have a future as farmers.
If young people see a future for themselves here, they'll stop wanting to leave. They'll want the same life as everybody else here. My neighbors ask me how they can get a system like mine, because they can see how well it works for me.
DW's Adrian Cage compiled that report.
Opinion.
And for our opinion this week, we go back to our top story, Zambia, which is heading to the polls on Thursday to elect a president and parliament, as well as decide on amendments to the constitution. Zambia depends heavily on copper export to fund its budget, but a drop in the price of raw materials at the international market led to a dismal performance of Zambia's economy. What do you think should be the priority of the next president? Send us your answers in an email to feedback.africa@dw.com or a letter to AfricaLink DW 53110 Bonn, Germany, or an SMS to country code plus 491609575951 0. And before we leave, here is a reminder of our top stories. Zambia gears up for the most difficult and highly contested general elections, and divisions among Nigeria's Islamic militant group Boko Haram. That's all we had for you today. Thank you for listening. I am Jane Ayeko Kumet, and I'll be here tomorrow. Enjoy the rest of your day.